Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasta Japa Prestaptamena Nita Tasta Japa Prestaptamena Nita Tasta Japa Prestaptamena Nita Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Tasta Chapa Prestakta Mena Nita Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Sanardha Vata Puna Anga Tasham Sanardha Vata Puna Anga Tasham Chanarda Vata Puna Angatasham Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Babuhu Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Babuhu Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Babuhu Chanarda Vata Puna Angatasham Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Babuhu Tasta Chapa Prestata Mena Nita Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Chanarda Vata Puna Angatasam Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Bhuhu Tasta Chapa Prestata Mena Nita Mayaiva Vrindavana Gocharena Chanarda Vata Puna Angatasam Hina Maya Kalpa Sama Babuhu Tata All those Chapaha Knights. Prestatamena. With the most dearly beloved. Nitaha. Spent. Maya. With me. Eva. Indeed. Vrindavana. In Vrindavan. Gocharena, who can be known, Chana, a moment, Ardavat, like half, Ta,
those very nights,
Puna, again, Anga,
dear Uddhava,
Dasham, for the gopis. Hina, bereft. Maya, of me. Kalpa,
Kalpa,
a day of Brahma.
A day of Brahma.
4,320,000,000 years.
4,320,000,000 years.
It's a long time, isn't it?
Samaha,
equal to.
Equal to.
Babu
became.
So this last section of the verse here, it's saying that, where are we? This is Chanardavata Puna Angatasham. So Chana means a moment. Yeah? So a moment that those very nights again when the gopis became bereft of Krishna, it's describing how a moment seemed like a day of Brahma. Yet we know that from the Krishna book and earlier on in the Bhagavatam, how it's describing how that night when Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasa dance was actually one night of Lord Brahma, but it seemed like just a moment. So this is describing, actually, according to Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, is describing a very, very elevated state of advancement. The previous verse, it's interesting because it's describing different stages in this. I mean, I don't claim to understand, you know, what's going on here, because this is a very, very elevated discussions of the residents of Vrindavan and their rasa, or the mellows they are experiencing with Krishna. So in the previous verse, according to Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, it's describing Anuraga, which is the sixth state of prema. They're all situated in prema. And the seventh state is actually Mahabhava, which generally it's understood that this is only experienced by two personalities. Do you know who the two personalities are? Lord Chaitanya and Radharani are actually the only persons who experience that. And why does Lord Chaitanya experience that? Huh?
Because he's in the world of the pure devotee.
No. What do you say? Sorry? He's in the mood of Srimati Radharani? Kind of. What does Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say? Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radhe Krishna, Nahe Anya. That Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna combined. So it's natural. He's definitely manifesting that mood of Radharani, but he is actually a manifestation of Radha and Krishna combined, so that he would naturally experience that love. And it's described in the fifth, I believe it's the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela, how Lord Chaitanya descended because he saw the love that Srimati Radharani was experiencing for him was greater than the love he himself could experience. So he wanted to descend to taste that love. So he descended, because Krishna doesn't experience Mahabhav. Only Radharani and Lord Chaitanya experienced that. So Krishna wanted to experience that, so he appeared as Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radha to experience that love, which is a very deep topic which is difficult to understand. That's why it's one of the internal reasons of Lord Chaitanya's descent. Anyhow, here we see in these four verses from 10 to 13, because Uddhava was asking in the previous section, he was asking Krishna to describe a devotee to him. So then Krishna is describing here in this section about devotees. And here in these four verses from 10 to 13, he's describing the gopis of Vrindavan. And it's interesting because he's describing the three kinds of persons, because in one of the earlier verses, I think it might even be the first verse of this chapter, Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee." So simply by associating with a pure devotee, one can bring Krishna under their control. So Krishna then, in the third verse, he discusses different personalities who became purified by the association of devotees. But it's interesting because he doesn't discuss in the verse who they associated with, but in the purport we see that it's described. I think they're quoting Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, is quoting who most of these personalities associated with, and a lot of them actually associated with Narada Muni. So Narada Muni, we can see, is a very, very effective devotee. There's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which discusses how that only one who's received the Shakti of Krishna can actually give one Krishna. Krishna Shakti Vinanahitaha Pravatan. So only one who's actually... and I was reading this verse in connection with some other verse, I can't remember where it was, maybe it was in the previous chapter, where Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was talking about how advanced devotees, advanced preachers, spiritual masters, stuff like that, they're actually not considered to be an ordinary jiva because they've actually received this Krishna Shakti. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was describing how they've been blessed by the Shakta Vesh, means like a Vesh means like a covering or a dress. So they've actually, you know, and therefore we see like personalities like, you know, advanced preachers or the spiritual master are not considered to be an ordinary person, which Krishna also himself points out in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. He describes the Acharya Mambijani Nava Manyajikahi Namaja Bhadasuja Savadeva Maya Guru. Very important verse actually, where he says that one should understand the Acharya to be myself. So again, Krishna's talking. It's not that the Acharya is God. It's not that like in the 70s they made that mistake, the devotees made the mistake and they were saying, oh actually we've misunderstood. You know, all along we've been thinking that Prabhupada was just a great preacher, but actually we misunderstood that he's God. You know, they thought he was God. And Prabhupada became pretty disgusted with that and he left Los Angeles and went to Japan. So it's not that we misunderstand that a great devotee is the Supreme Personality of God, and many people do make this blunder, but we understand that because of their dedication to propagating the mission of Krishna consciousness, then they become blessed with the potency of Krishna in order to be able to propagate Krishna consciousness. This is Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravatan. They're being blessed like that. And then so Lord says that one should understand the Acharya to be myself. One should never disrespect him in any way, thinking him to be an ordinary human being. And then he goes, he says, Sava Deva Maya Guru, that he's the representative of all the demigods. So one who's seen as Guru, one who's seen as Acharya, is not an ordinary personality because Krishna has blessed them. Because only Krishna can actually, you know, propagate God consciousness. So he blesses people in order that they can carry out this preaching work and actually, you know, give them the holy name. And I've seen this many, many times, and I'm sure you've all seen this many times, how great devotees are able to inspire others to spontaneously take up the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And this is not an ordinary thing. I remember one time I was in Poland and it was the Woodstock Festival. And we were in they have a big tent there, you know, gigantic, like much bigger than the tents we have here. There's about 12,000 people in this tent. And Jai Pataka Maharaj was on stage and he was preaching through a translator, which I can tell you is very difficult to, you know, because you've got to actually very carefully think about what you say and not use any like colloquial terms that you grew up with because maybe they don't understand. You've got to go into this whole explanation about what it is. So he was speaking and he was telling them all about the glories of chanting Hare Krishna, the benefits of chanting Hare Krishna, stuff like that, and then he got them chanting Hare Krishna. He had 12,000 people roaring at the top of their lungs the holy name of Krishna. So, you know, it's not an ordinary thing to be able to do that, to get, you know, conditioned. I mean, a lot of those people were like severely intoxicated. I mean, you know, I think they were sniffing glue or something, many of them, because they were really, you know, off their minds. And of course, in a country like Poland, vodka is a very big thing, and vodka does something weird to your brain. I remember one time we were driving to, I think it was Wrocław or Łódź, I can't remember where we were going. But there was this man standing in the middle of the highway with his pants around his ankles, directing the traffic. It was like out in the middle of nowhere. He's completely off his brain on vodka. It does weird things. So, you know, these people were, you know, quite intoxicated. Many of them, not all of them, quite intoxicated and different things. But still, somehow or other, by Maharaj's preaching, he was able to cut through the ignorance of this intoxication and inspire them to chant the holy name of the Lord. And to chant Krishna's holy name is not an ordinary thing. And for someone to actually be able to chant Krishna's holy name, it's not an ordinary thing, because it means their spiritual life has begun. Their connection with Krishna has begun. Their life has completely changed. Because this, as we understand, this is the prime means of God realization in this age. So somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna's devotees, these persons were able to take up the chanting of Hare Krishna. So, not an ordinary person. So we see with Narad Muni, you know, many of these persons that are discussed here in this section, these, and actually Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says there's three types of devotees that are being discussed there. I think he mentions a Karma Mishra Bhakta, a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, and a Kevala Bhakta. So not smart enough to figure out which ones are which, but it discusses all these different types of personalities there. So obviously Narad Muni, because he's an empowered personality, I mean, we see he travels all over the universe. He can actually go and visit Krishna in Dwarka, in his palaces, and see so many wonderful things. So he's an empowered devotee, so he's able to inspire others. And we see, you know, some of them were associating with Prahlad Maharaj, like Bali Maharaj. He got Prahlad Maharaj's association and different personalities. And we see even it mentions in this verse, where is it? How the gopis in Vrindavan and the wives of the brahmanas who were performing sacrifice, they also got the association of devotees. So how do we understand that? The gopis of Vrindavan, aren't they Nityasiddha? Actually, not all of them are Nityasiddha, because there's different groups of devotees. There's the I don't remember the technical names, but there's the groups of devotees who were in Dandakaranya, and they were sages in Dandakaranya, and they saw Lord Ramachandra. They're very attracted to him, and they asked him for the blessing that they wanted to become his wife. You know, they wanted to take on, and he said, "Well, no, only this." Did they say they want to become a wife, or they want to have a? I can't remember exactly the conversation, but anyhow, they were inspired to develop a conjugal relationship with Ram. But he said, "No, but I've taken a vow of only having one wife." So then, in their next appearance, they actually appeared in Vrindavan as cowherd girls, gopis, and then they got the association of the Nityasiddha gopis who had descended from the spiritual realm. So we see, and the wives of the brahmanas also, they got described, I think describes here, the wives of the brahmanas performing sacrifice had the association with women sent by Lord Krishna to sell flowers and betel nuts and heard about the Lord from them. So they also got the association of greatly advanced devotees. And in this way, we see that this story, how it describes how even though their husbands were performing yajnic sacrifices, their wives who were not performing any of these sacrifices, because of the association they received, were actually able to surrender even more than they were. So the husbands were very closely following the Vedas, yet not necessarily receiving the association of advanced devotees, whereas the wives of the brahmanas, they received this association. And they were able to sacrifice far more. They actually gave everything to Krishna. They gave their whole lives. They just wanted to, you know, run off in the forest and completely give up their husbands, etc., to serve Krishna. And as it's pointed out by Krishna's Kaviraj, it says, sadhu-sangha, sarva-shastra-khoi, lava-matra, sadhu-sangha, sarva-siddha-khoi. That it's the conclusion of sarva-shastra-khoi. All the revealed scriptures reveal that even by a moment's association with sadhu, that one can achieve all success. So this saintly association is one of the key elements in advancing in devotional service, which Rupa Goswami also points out. Sangha tyaga sato brite. So sangha tyaga, you give up inauspicious association. Sato brite, you associate with saintly persons. Sadvi bhakti prasidyati. These are six items that can assure one of pure devotional service. So this association with saintly persons is very, very important. And we see here that Krishna is discussing this same point. How by receiving association that one can actually bring him under control. So if we're able to receive the association of great saintly persons, then we can become elevated in devotional service, and actually Krishna will come under our control. And we see, you know, so many examples. You look at Narad Muni. In his previous life, he was the son of a maidservant, and he didn't even know who his father was. Yet his mother was engaged in the association of Bhagavatas. And it's described how he used to serve them very intimately. He would wash their clothes, he would serve them prasad. And one time, I took their remnants with their permission. He asked them if he could take the remnants. He took the remnants, and that caused him to become Narad Muni in his next life. That was his understanding. That's how he became Narad Muni, was by this association of these saintly personalities. So it is being emphasized here, and actually emphasized all throughout the scriptures, that we should never underestimate the association of saintly persons. Because the association of the saintly persons is the key to success in devotional service. An association, as we were discussing previously, it doesn't just mean some like formal ritualistic or ritualized association. You know, we go through some formal procedure, like when the Maharaj comes, we give him a garland, we bathe their feet. But in our mind, we're thinking, oh, you know, what's this guy want? You know, why is he? All these different like negative thoughts are going on. But actually, we see how with great Vaishnavas, what you can read in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, we can see how nicely these advanced devotees associated with each other. You know, how they would eagerly serve each other, how they would eagerly hear discussions of philosophy, take the remnants, etc. Their general behavior is a very good example for us to follow. So we need to associate with love. We develop these loving feelings for the Vaishnavas, because we can understand that the great Vaishnavas are very close to Krishna. And by associating with them in this spirit of love, then we can also develop the same mood that they have for Krishna. So very, very important. I'll read the translation. Dear Uddhava, all of those nights that the gopis spent with me, their most dearly beloved, in the land of Vrindavan, seemed to them to pass in less than a moment. Bereft of my association, however, the gopis felt those same nights dragged on forever, as if each night were equal to a day of Brahma. So we see, if they're in Krishna's association, time is passing so fast that, you know, a day of Brahma seems like a moment, or a night of Brahma, as we know from the Rasa dance. It's described in the Shastra how that went for one night of Lord Brahma, because Krishna wanted to relish this pastime, and he also wanted to give them this opportunity to associate with him in this very, very intimate way, because he was satisfied with their surrender, because they had given up everything. You know? It's just like it's described in the purport. We'll read the purport in a little while. It's described in the purport how we see a very common example, how young women are very much into their bodies. You know, sometimes we see the way they put on, not so much with our devotees, but you see them with outside people, you know, like the amount of makeup they put on and stuff. And sometimes, I've never seen it, but my wife has described it to me, that how sometimes people are in the mirror for hours, in front of the mirror, like, you know, just curling their eyebrows or putting on the, not eyebrows, eyelashes, or putting on these. Actually, I saw it when my wife and myself were traveling somewhere on a train or a plane or something, and this woman, she had this device, you know, and she's like putting on these, never seen it before in my life, you know, putting on these false eyelashes. I was like, wow, I didn't know people did stuff like that, you know. It's like a pair of pliers or something. And they just spend so much time doting over their bodies. You know, and sometimes you see they'll like change their clothes 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day. Every time you see them, they've got something different on. You know, my auntie, she used to wear wigs all the time. You know, she had all these different wigs. You know, they just like, you know, put on all this black stuff on their eyes. And some of them look. I remember my wife was telling me, you know, she's quite simple. She's not into makeup and stuff like that. And so someone came over for our wedding. You know, to decorate, you know, do all that stuff with her. And so they spent like ages putting it all on. And then my wife went and looked in the mirror and said, ah, it looked like Dracula or something. It was horrible, so she had them take it all off, you know. But, you know, some people just spend, you know, forever doing this type of stuff. They're just like so much into their body. And this is normal for young girls to do that. And we see here that it's described how the gopis weren't interested in that. They just put all thought of their own satisfaction aside. They simply wanted to please Krishna. So, and even they gave up their affection for, they didn't even think, I mean, you know, for a wife to not think of her husband. You know, a wife is just completely absorbed in the satisfaction of her husband. Or a mother is completely absorbed in the care of their child. And you see, women with babies, you know, they're so affectionate, they're so caring, make sure the baby doesn't get hurt, make sure this, make sure that. You know, they're very concerned to see that the children are taken care of nicely. So much so that the child becomes their life and soul. And this is natural. This is not unusual or anything. This is natural for the woman to take care of a child like that. Yet we see the gopis, they were so attached to Krishna that they just completely forgot about that. Like they didn't even have children, like they didn't even have husbands, like they didn't even have bodies. And I think in one of the subsequent verses it talks about how they gave the analogy excuse me of sages. How the sages, when they're immersed in yoga trance, they completely forget their external body. We can, there are many, many nice pastimes and stories of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. There's one story, I won't go into the detail because that's kind of like a whole other story, you give a whole class just on this one pastime of Sanatana Goswami. How when he was meditating upon Radha and Krishna's body, Radha and Krishna's pastimes, that he just completely forgot his external body and he actually assumed the spiritual form because he was there participating in the pastimes. And it's the yogis immersed in trance, they forget about this external thing. So the gopis are the same. So because they had developed that degree of love and because they gave up all external affections for Krishna's pleasure, then Krishna wanted to give them pleasure unlimitedly. So he expanded this one night dancing in Vrindavan. So it was like one night of Lord Brahma. Yet for the gopis, because they were so immersed in their relationship with Krishna, this seemed like just a moment, an 11th of a second, just like gone, nothing. And in Krishna's separation, what's that verse in the Chistastikam? Yugayatam nimishena chakshusha prasunyayatam jagatvam govindam. Oh Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. But actually the gopis are considering a moment to be like 4,320,000,000 years or more. They're feeling such, the separation is so intense, it's burning them so much that it seems like it just goes on forever and ever and ever and ever. And in the previous verse, it discusses how when Akrura came and he took Krishna and Balaram to Vrindavan, this was like tearing the gopis' hearts out because the only object of their affection, actually the only object of their life, the focus of their life, Krishna, was leaving. And they couldn't stand the thought of separation. They couldn't bear the thought that Krishna was going to leave. So they were trying so many different things to try to convince Krishna not to leave. They were talking to Krishna, they were pleading with Balaram. There are actually some gopis in front of the chariot pleading to the horses, please don't go, please don't leave Vrindavan. You know? The gopis were throwing themselves in front of the chariots, they wouldn't let him. I remember one time we were in Poland and Trivikram Maharaj was visiting the place where we were staying. And then when it was time for him to leave, Sri Pallad and Jumaraj, they threw themselves in front of the car so they couldn't drive away. So sometimes devotees do things like that because they don't want the separation. So in the same way the gopis, this thought of separation from Krishna was just too much for them to bear. And so they were prepared to give up their own lives rather than lose the association with Krishna. And we see how when the chariot was leaving, they just stood there and watched and watched and watched and watched and watched. And the chariot was disappearing and finally they could just see the flag and they're still watching and the chariot was still going. They could finally just see the dust raised by the chariot. And it was just so terrible an experience for them, that actually some of them just became like statues and they didn't move for days, for weeks, for months, for years. They just stood there looking in the direction where Krishna had gone. It was so painful for them. And of course, this is something very difficult for us to understand because, of course, we have some experience in this material world. I heard a case just recently of a mother who had lost their child. I think it was their child. And just like, you know, every time they thought about their child, they would just start crying. And, you know, very, very painful experience. But, you know, that's just like an ordinary, mundane experience. So we can see that how much people in this material world, they suffer due to... I remember when my father died, that was a very, very painful experience for me. You know, I was crying for weeks. You know, every time I thought about my father, I would just burst into tears. And it was kind of, you know, I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. 11 years old when I was in high school. And it's, you know, material life being what it is. People at school, you know, certain people at school were making jokes about my father, you know, because he died down in Antarctica. And so, what happened to your father? He got eaten by the penguins and stuff like that. And for me, that was a very, very painful time. And so, you know, like, I'm sure we've all had painful times in our lives. And if we reflect upon these things, you know, and then try to compare it to what the gopis were experiencing, it's completely different. Even though for us it's a very, very disturbing, and sometimes it leaves such a very deep impression. You know, it's nothing compared to what they were experiencing. They were actually ready to give up their lives, and you know, and this is actually what's being described now in this verse here, is how this moment of separation, they were considering it to be like a day of Brahma, and a moment in the association was, you know, an evening's association, you know, an evening by the time of Lord Brahma's association with Krishna was like a moment. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes how this is Rudabhava, or the first stage of what does he call it? Yeah, Rudabhava, which is the first stage of Mahabhava. So, you know, their separation, their affection, it's far different, because our separation, our affection, is never devoid of the concept of ourselves. It's always related in relation to ourselves, whereas the gopis, their affection is completely devoid of any concept of themselves or what they're going to get out of it. Just like when we feel affection for someone, we're feeling, you know, what's the benefit I'm getting from this? I love this person because I will enjoy, I will have sex, I will this, I will that. And as soon as that becomes unpleasant, throw it out. As soon as the exchange becomes unpleasant, throw it out. I don't want it anymore. Yet we see in the exchange of the residents of Vrindavan with Krishna, particularly that of the gopis, they don't care if it becomes unpleasant. They don't care what happens. You know, as Radharani plays, you know, praise his, my dear Lord, you can trample me under your feet, I don't mind. You can hold me by your embrace, I don't mind. Whatever it is you want, I'll do that because I just want to please you. You don't see that in this material world. Because as soon as it gets to the point, it's like, you know, people calculate this all the time in their marriages, you know, is it getting to the point where it's too unpleasant for me? If so, gone, finished. I'll get rid of this one, I'll get another one. But, you know, the residents of Vrindavan can never consider that about Krishna, because their love is on a different level. And actually, as is pointed out by Krishna's Kaviraj, in this material world there is no love. It's calm. Kamendriya. Because why? It's based around our senses. But prem, or love, is Krishnendriya. It's based around the senses of Krishna. So that's the difference. The gopis, their pleasure is the pleasure of Krishna. That whatever they're experiencing as pleasure is simply based around the pleasure of Krishna. That's all they want to do, is satisfy Krishna. So it's a completely different experience. And we can never experience that until we come to the point of just wanting to satisfy Krishna. That there's nothing in our lives but trying to satisfy Krishna. So, you know, sometimes people will make this comparison. They will try to equate what the gopis or the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing, the relationship with Krishna, or what Krishna is doing. They try to equate that with what they experience here in this material world. But this is actually offensive. This is what the Mayavadis do. We see in India, they have these, you know, Bhagavat Saptahas and things like that, where they're trying to
make the pastimes of Krishna appear very mundane, so that they themselves can then indulge in similar things. Yet we see, you know, there is a significant difference between what they're experiencing and what the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing. Significant difference. Because the residents of Vrindavan only have one purpose, and that is to satisfy Krishna. And that's the goal of the devotees, is just to develop this single point of attention where I just want to satisfy Krishna. Krishna himself says this to Arjuna, Vyasamita Buddha, Eke He Kuru Nandana. You have this one point of determination to satisfy me. Yeah, it's a very interesting section of the Bhagavatam. As I say this practically every time, all sections of the Bhagavatam are very interesting. Actually, I was listening to a class the other day. It's kind of interesting because someone was saying to me recently that, oh, you know, when they do these Bhakti Vaibhav courses and Bhakti Shastri, it should be very short. And I kind of think that myself, you know, that they tend to go on too long, you know, because you'd be, you know, 120 by the time you get to the end of them all. By the time you finish studying the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'd be 120 years old. You'll never make it. But I was listening to a class the other day, and Prabhupada was saying, is that each verse in this Bhagavatam is so important, so much full of information, you could spend 1 month studying every single verse. He says, how many years is that? 1,500 years to study the Bhagavatam. There's 18,000 verses. Huh? 1 month on each verse, 1,500 years. Never get to the end of it. And the fact is that each verse of the Bhagavatam, we see that Lord Chaitanya, he took one verse and he explained it in 64 different ways. And he said these were just the primary explanations. There are actually many, many more explanations. So the Bhagavatam is like that. It's so glorious that every single word is so full of meaning. And we'll see, there's a verse coming up. Where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains some of the words, two words I think it is, in three or four different ways. And they're really interesting meanings he gives about, you know, how the gopis are... I forgot where it was, but it was really, really interesting. Not so important, but the point being is that there is so much meaning in these verses. I'll read the purport. Srila Sridhar Swami comments as follows: the gopis suffered extreme anxiety in the absence of Lord Krishna, and though outwardly appearing bewildered, they actually achieved the highest perfectional stage of samadhi. Because they're constantly absorbed in Krishna. That's what samadhi means. It's like this one-pointed focus. You know? It's like we're just completely absorbed. They're completely absorbed, even though they appear. Because, you know, different manifestations of prema, they cause bewilderment, and there's so many different things that come up. But actually, they're not... maybe externally they appear bewildered, but they're still absorbed in Krishna. And that's a manifestation of that bewilderment, absorption is the bewilderment. They actually achieved... their consciousness was intensely and intimately attached to Lord Krishna, and by such Krishna consciousness, their own bodies seemed very far away from them, even though people normally consider their bodies to be their closest possession. And isn't it we see that people just dote over their bodies, you know, like sometimes the way they, you know, comb their hair and this thing and that thing, and it's like, you know, curl their eyebrows and so many strange things, you know. Shave their legs, you know, shave under their arms, so many things. You know. Get their beard permed. You know. Some people, I actually see some people in India, they see these great big curly moustaches. The things that people do to try, curl their nose hairs. Things that people do to try to, you know, because of their attachment to their body. In fact, the gopis did not think about their own existence. See, they even gave up thoughts of their own existence. They even gave up thoughts of their own well-being. They gave up all their external connections just to be with Krishna. They heard Krishna playing the flute, and they ran to the forest, forgetting everything, forgetting all their normal worldly duties. They just ran to the forest. Although a young woman normally considers her husband and children to be her dearmost possessions, the gopis did not even consider the existence of their so-called families, nor could they think of this world or life after death. Indeed, they were not at all aware of these things. Just like great sages who become detached from the names and forms of the material world, the gopis could not think of anything because they were wrapped in loving remembrance of Lord Krishna. Just as rivers enter the ocean, similarly, the gopis completely merged in the consciousness of Lord Krishna through intense love. And it's an interesting analogy because this is discussed in the next verse, how when a river enters into the ocean, it loses its existence and just becomes immersed in the ocean. So in the same way, the gopis, they immerse themselves in Krishna, and not that they lost their own identity, but they forgot their own identity. That's the difference. That's when you're using analogy. You know, the analogies are good to a certain point, but not completely, because when the river merges into the ocean, it loses its identity. But you know, the living entity, when they immerse themselves in the thought of Krishna, they don't lose their identity. Krishna, Prabhupada preaches very strongly against this, and Krishna preaches very strongly against this. They don't lose their identity. They give up the concept of identity, but they still maintain their identity. In Prabhupada, there's that what's that verse? In the second canto, he says, neither you nor I and all these kings. That he says, neither you nor I will all exist in the past, will all exist in the present, will all exist in the future. So he's saying we'll always have existence. We don't lose our existence. So the gopis, they're not losing their existence. They're just forgetting about it because they're immersed in serving Krishna. Thus, the day of Brahma seemed like a single moment for the gopis when Lord Krishna was present with them, and a single moment seemed like a day of Brahma when Lord Krishna was absent. The Krishna consciousness of the gopis is the perfection of spiritual life, and the symptoms of such perfection are described here. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this verse shows the outstanding quality of Ruda Bhava, which is a type of Mahabhava. So that it's the beginning stage. And this is also described in the Ujjwala Nilamani in great detail. Okay, so any questions about that?
Just one thing, I was looking at this, and you know the title of the chapter, which says Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge. How are these two, you know, in what context? What is first thing, beyond renunciation and knowledge, and how does this fit into that context? Like,
yeah, quite easily actually. We see how in the previous chapter, Uddhava had asked Krishna to describe devotional service to him, and so Uddhava. Krishna described many, many aspects of devotional service to Uddhava. But now in this chapter he's telling, but you need to go beyond that, because that's not the highest thing. And here he's saying, he's describing how the gopis are beyond that. They don't have knowledge that Krishna's God. They're not interested in renunciation, going to live in the forest or anything like that. But their renunciation is far beyond the renunciation of any yogi or any person like that, because they've given up everything. Even their own concepts of themselves. They've given up everything just to serve Krishna. So their renunciation is beyond ordinary renunciation. And they have no knowledge of, you know, all these different things. When Krishna was preaching to them one time, and he said, we're simple cowherd girls. We don't understand all these things. All we know is we want to serve you. We want to be with you. So yeah, way beyond these ordinary. Something else? Yes, I did. Laughed. He laughed and laughed and laughed, and then he drove off. A noisy phone. Actually, I had an experience, because we were talking about the just before we were talking about the cruel laws of material nature. Just when I came this morning, there was a little bird there sitting on the ground, and Rasanandini Maharaji was sitting there protecting him, or him or her, it. Birds often fly into the window there. You know, the window is just outside the window. And they come flying past full speed, and they bang, they hit it, fall down the ground, practically out cold. So all the other birds were coming and attacking it, right? This is the nature of the material world. Prabhupada would often talk about the cruel laws or the stringent laws of material nature. Because that bird has a weakness, the others attack it and kill it. If it has some, like if a bird's born with some defect, like, you know, say for instance, one bird's born albino. Yeah, it's like a freak. So nature takes care of its own. You know, in human life, we protect them and put a padded cell around them so they can grow up freaks and have all these, like, you know, emotional disturbances because of the way their body is. Yet we see in material nature takes care of these things, that the other living entities kill them. So the species is maintained, you know. But it's very cruel because the way they're just killed, you know, the other birds will come and peck it to death because it's, you know, it's injured or it's got something wrong with it or it's a freak. That's the way material nature is. Very, very harsh. So, and we see, you know, in this material life, people are suffering so grievously because of their attachment to trying to, you know, to try to lord over material nature. So the process of Krishna consciousness is inspiring us, guiding us how to become free from material nature so we don't have to suffer these stringent laws of material nature anymore. So we go back home, back to Godhead and immerse ourselves in the pastimes of Krishna. Forget about ourselves and just be absorbed in Krishna. Yeah.
Did you say merge your consciousness
in
Krishna?
Immerse. If I did say merge, I meant to say immerse. Because we're not Mayavadis. Cannot merge. Not possible. But the consciousness can become immersed, it can become absorbed, in that sense, merged. But it's not like we give up. And that's the point I was making about this analogy of the river losing itself in the sea. It does merge, and it becomes at one point where you cannot, there is no discernible difference at all, and the river does become the sea. And in that way they merge. But, you know, a living entity can't do that. A living entity can't lose their existence. It's not possible. Even though for some time it may seem that we merge into the Brahma Jyoti, that's a temporary thing because the living entity has its existence. A living entity can never lose that existence. And that's the point that Krishna makes. He says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So Krishna is very clearly, and Prabhupada says with one word, he defeats Mayavadi philosophy. Tvam. I think that's the word he says. In one word, he defeats Mayavadi philosophy. Never cease to be in the future. So there's no question of merging. You know, may enter into the Brahma Jyoti for some time and seem like they lose their existence. And Prabhupada also, the Vedas use this analogy of a green bird going into a green tree. If you ever tried to take photographs of a green bird in a green tree, not very good because the bird merges into the greenness and you can't really pick them out. But if you take a photo of a green bird with a blue background, they stand out very well, or a brown background, something like that. So it appears like the bird has lost its existence, but as the bird flies into the tree, it also flies out. It doesn't become the tree. So same for the living entity. We cannot lose our existence. We're always individual. Important to remember. Ada Kukuti Nyaya, it's called.
Yeah.
The logic of half a hen.
Yeah.
So the farmer was thinking, I like this end because it produces the eggs, but I don't like this end because I've got to feed it all the time. So Prabhupada uses that in relation to people with their acceptance of Shastra. And then I've forgotten. Yeah, but I think that they use the Veda. They use the Veda. I can look it up. I've just forgotten. Yeah, I've forgotten, sorry. I was listening to it not so long ago, but I don't have a very good memory. Okay. Do you remember what that the logic is? How Prabhupada uses that? Article Kudinyaya? All right. I'll look it up and I'll get back to you on it.
Hmm. It's not that you stop existing, but like you went, then when you meet something in the world, when you go and see, and we have deep sleep, we don't have any dreams, we don't have anything going on. It's like that in Brahmacharya, but that's why we say this is like a spiritual suicide, because you stop becoming aware of your identity, your existence.
But nonetheless, you cannot remain there. The living entity can't remain in the Brahmajyoti because the living entity is by nature active, so they have to again fall down. And that's that verse, you know, Yenye Ravindakya Bimukti Marina, where they say, you know, they're saying that they're considering themselves Bimukti Marina, they consider themselves liberated, but because of their Avishuddha Buddhaya, because of their impure intelligence, because of neglecting the Lord's lotus feet, they fall down again. Patanti ado yushmarangraya. They fall down again to this material world. There's an interesting verse to understand what is actually going on for the impersonalists. Because they're thinking they're liberated, but actually they're not. Because liberation is in connection with Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Karnatara, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki. Jai Nityai Gopinath.